Welcome to the Leverage Podcast, where we give you men's dating advice that doesn't suck. I'm your host, Robbie Kramer, a former finance guy, online poker pro, and highly ranked collegiate golfer, before I became obsessed with understanding attraction and passionate about teaching men how to improve their love lives. Tune in each week, where we'll give you the latest and greatest strategies to get more dates, make yourself more attractive and confident with the opposite sex in order to meet your perfect 10, and design a lifestyle that makes all your buddies jealous. If you're a regular listener and digging our content, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, wherever you watch or listen to this. But if you don't think it's worthy of 5 stars, just go ahead, don't leave any review at all. If you're new to the show, I recommend you download my dating protocol. It'll help you optimize your first dates and subsequent dates. I like to connect with my listeners personally, so if you want to pick up a copy of that PDF, please direct message me on Instagram at Robbie_Kramer. Before we dive into this week's content, I want to let you guys know we've opened up a few slots in our exclusive community called Leverage. We are accepting applications if you want to join our select group of men and experience the radical power of accountability to step up your game, cross off everything on your sexual bucket list, and become a beast at accomplishing your goals. To learn more and apply, go to innerconfidence.com/leverage. Now let's dive into this week's content. Yo guys, we're back with a man who probably doesn't need an introduction because he's that much of a boss in the manosphere and the men's personal development niche, you could say. But I'll introduce him anyways, just for you guys who don't know him. And that is James Marshall, who is a longtime friend of mine. I think we've been buddies since like 2007, 2008. We met at, I'm embarrassed to admit, the Pickup Artist World Summit, believe it or not, back in L.A., and we were both given the award for the least creepy dude who was teaching there. Not actually, but him and I, you know, we bonded because we both kind of came from the same sort of mentality, whereas a lot of these old school pickup guys were, you know, very tactical and you know, a little sleazy. But James has been coaching forever, at least as long as I have, 15 plus years, maybe 20 plus years. He's the owner of the Natural Lifestyles. Tons of followers, and I'm shocked we haven't actually, maybe you came on the podcast many, many years ago, but I think this is the first time you came on the podcast since the new version. So James, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Robbie. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And you I don't think you should say you're embarrassed that we met at the PUA summit or whatever it was back then. I look back on those days with a kind of fond nostalgia of the early days of pickup when It was absolutely a circus and a freak show, but it was kind of a sincere time in the sense that it was before it got all political, before you know, before all the gender wars, culture wars stuff. It was really just dudes who couldn't get chicks trying to get chicks any way they could, and then all the weird and wonderful characters that came out of that. I remember those days with a fond longing.
Yeah, no, that's a better way to frame it for sure. Because yeah, those were, in a lot of ways, you know, better times, you could argue, than now, how politicized everything's become and how touchy everything's become. Because, yeah, it's like there wasn't a lot out there and it wasn't taboo to call people pickup artists. That was actually kind of like a cool thing. Even like you'd tell a girl like, oh, I'm a pickup artist. They're like, oh, wow, that's cool. Like you pick up chicks. Awesome. But now
VH1.
yeah, exactly. VH1. So, yeah. But how did you get, you know, into it? Give us your story.
Well, I've lived many lives like you, and yeah, I did start in, I think, 2006. So we've been doing this roughly the same amount of time, right?
Like, yeah,
we're the dinosaurs of the industry.
Seriously,
so, and some of the last men standing too.
Right.
So, yeah, my background before I got into becoming a dating coach, which I don't call myself a pickup artist anymore, although I certainly did it in the past. Yeah, I mean, I was like a hippie, kung fu, spiritual guy through my 20s. I became a funk reggae disco musician in my mid-20s and played in bands for a long, long time. Basically, I did a whole bunch of stuff to avoid having any kind of real job. I was a massage therapist. Martial arts teacher and some occasional model and actor and one-time porn star.
Wow.
You didn't know that? It was 2006, yeah.
Really? Like a real, like, produced porn? No shit.
Oh yeah, like it was the file. I first need
to jerk off to later.
I will. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. It was, well, it's like when you, what do I expect?
I'll watch.
So
it,
yeah, like I remember I was my buddy who was an actor, you know, an actual actor. He would receive these like audition notices from some agency or whatever, and one day he says, Jamie, I think this one's for you. And I come over to the computer and it says, it was female erotica, rock and roll erotica, searching for slim, long-haired dude who's willing to fuck on camera, something like that, you know. And I'm like, that does sound like me. So I called up the director, who is this big lesbian, and told her that I'm the man for the job. And she said, well, you better come over then. And I came over, rode my bicycle over to her apartment, came in and read the lines. And then I said, do you want to see the package? And she said, well, yes. And then I showed her the package and she told me I was hired. So yeah, I actually performed in Australia's, I think, only feminist or female erotica rock and roll road movie that was ever filmed. Someone must have put a bunch of money into it because it was a proper production. It was 2 months. It had full sets. You know, we used some of the iconic rock and roll venues in Melbourne, and had like a band. I was like a rock star in the movie, and like had full audiences. Like, it was huge. And whoever put money into it must have lost it all, because it was a terrible movie. And it was too much movie to be porn and too much porn to be movie. Yeah, so they had a whole script and a whole story, which was a bad story. So I was, at the end of it, I was like, who's this for? Because it's like, the you know, you wouldn't want to actually watch it as a movie, and you'd get frustrated watching it as a porno. But it's out there. You guys can, if you want to figure it out, you want to go and check it out. It's on the internet forever. So that was the day that when I signed the contract on that, where I like made a commitment to never entering politics or having any kind of position in society where I needed to have a good reputation.
You gave that up on that day.
On that, I knew it too. I knew it. I'm like, and with this,
right?
Fuck you to society. Society.
Once you cross that line into porn, especially, like, you know, but so you never did anymore, I take it.
No, I got a lot of offers after that from gay German porn companies. Mm. So they'd found it, and they were like, "We would like you to appear in our next movie, which is called He Likes He or whatever." And so no, that I didn't take any of those offers. But
those are the big money ones. Beginning it, apparently, the gay ones, they pay extra, I've heard.
Yeah, gay for play. Was it pay, gay for pay? Yep. Yep. Well, you know, if I ever get desperate, we'll see.
Well, you seem to be doing pretty well ever since.
Yeah, let's hope we don't need to go back to that. But yeah, since then, so in around 2005 or so, I started. I mean, I was a nerdy guy growing up. I was a flute playing weirdo who was into ancient history and all sorts of kind of nerdy, obscure interests in an Australian town where that was not okay, and where I was beaten up regularly for being a bit of a fucking poofter, which is Australian for gay. And so, you know, I wasn't great with the ladies growing up. I did have some girlfriends now and then, but I got obsessed with seduction in the early days. I was obviously aware of the Mystery Method and the kind of LA scene, but that stuff didn't work in Australia. If it ever did work, I don't know. Because, you know, Australians are just a bit more no bullshit, and you go up and start trying to tell a girl a complex story and read her something. She's like, what the fuck are you doing, mate? Do you want to get fucking laid or not?
Real quick to interrupt. So, I actually taught a boot camp in Sydney in 2007 when I was working for Pickup 101 before I branched out on my own. Yeah.
Wow,
and I never got less love than I did in Australia. Cause just as you said, I came in with all the banter lines and all of this and all of that. I must have approached, I think I counted 350 girls that week. I got laid by one not so cute girl. And that's a lot of reps. So,
yeah, that is a lot of reps. Yeah. And she was probably cute by Australian standards.
She was like, maybe
just take the compliment.
Okay. Right? Yeah, I'm trying to think. Wait, Australian standard? Yeah, okay.
yeah. We're known for our good-looking men, but less so for our good-looking ladies, I would say.
Ah, okay.
So yeah, like you know, I got into the early pickup scene in Melbourne, which was when back in the forum days on the Lairs, and quickly realized that I was already better than most of the guys that were there. And so I stepped into a kind of leadership role because at least I was approaching, you know, I didn't know much, but most of the guys were too scared to do that. So I started, you know, going, who wants to go out? And some guys be like, all right. And I'm like, well, why don't you go and talk to that chick and I'll talk to this one. And so gradually sort of stepped into a surrogate kind of coaching role early on. And then, yeah, another guy who was in the scene approached me and said, let's fucking start a business and call it The Natural and teach natural game and see if we can get paid to get laid. And that was our business, you know, business plan written on the back of a napkin. 50% each. Bad idea, guys. Never start a contract with 50% each with a guy you met a month ago.
Did that.
So, you know.
Bad idea, confirmed.
Yeah. We've all, it's, maybe we can talk about some of the business mistakes if guys are interested, because we've probably made them all. But yeah, so I started like teaching weekend workshops in Melbourne in the early days. And then my kind of big break was when I came, well, it was because of our mutual friend and god of the pickup industry, Vince Kelvin. I was speaking at this crappy little conference, you know, it was basically the back of a pub in Melbourne. And for some reason, Vince was there. Like, he'd been invited and he turned up.
Wow.
And there was 20 guys in the back of a pub and Vince Kelvin was there. And he saw my speech and then afterwards he came over and he said, James, I really liked your style, your natural type of style. I would like to invite you to the POS Summit in Los Angeles, California. And I was like, whoa.
Oh my okay. God, bravo for that fucking perfect impersonation. That was unbelievable. You're really good at voices, by the way.
Thanks. It's one of my hobbies. And Vince, I've been working on my Vince for quite a while. And like seriously, like I do have a lot of respect for and love for Vince Kelvin, actually. Like, you know, I know if you look at his videos, they can look quite I don't know what the adjective is, over the top, let's say. But he's quite a sincere man and a purist in terms of seduction. Like, you know, he's old school on the street kind of guy. And so we became buddies, kind of odd couple buddies. And I came over to the POA Summit in, I think that was 2010, and that's where I met you.
Yeah. Oh, was that 2010? Yeah, I guess that was a bit later.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, Vince. Yeah, because he's always been a good guy. You know, he's got his persona, which is awesome. But yeah, he's a very, you know, Vince is great. I haven't been following what he's been up to lately, but never a dull moment with him.
if you're ever bored, just look up Vince's latest Kiss compilation, and they're just awesome. I just love him with the pounding shitty techno and just like, you know, like make out after make out. He loves those make out. And then his students going, Vince has got like 4,000 make outs. And like, he loves the make outs. one little Vince story. Like, I was passing through LA on the way down to Peru to go and do ayahuasca of all things. And so I was there for a day. And that's right. I actually had a meeting with the guys that did the VH1 pickup thing because they were thinking of maybe that I might be the next guy to do a reality show because I was maybe a bit more palatable to the midday soccer mum kind of audience. And of course, nothing came out of it. We went and had our LA business lunch and I was like, let's do a deal. And then never heard from him again. But so I was there and I contacted Vince. I was down in Venice and he was in Hollywood. And he's like, James, I would love to see you. I said, okay, cool, man. I'll catch a taxi out to Hollywood and I'll come and see you. And, you know, that was $100. And for me back then, that was a lot of money. And so I caught the taxi all the way out to Hollywood. And Vince said, yeah, that's right. He was teaching a program. Come and meet him. So I arrived and there was Vince, 10 guys. And immediately he's like, James, so great to see you. Maybe you could take these guys. And he just like palmed off half his students to me. And suddenly I found myself coaching for free on the street. And after, you know, I was like, oh, whatever, fucking whatever. So yeah, cool. All right, dudes, let's go. So when we'd finished the session, you know, we get together. I'm like, hey, Vince, let's go have a drink. Let's hang out, catch up. So we're walking down the street. And then these two women walked by and they were very large. And I would say they were not the type of girls that you guys want to talk to or any of us want to talk to. I was just like, you know, I wouldn't even just, let's just say they weren't hot. And I'm trying to have a conversation with Vince and he goes, I'll be right back. And he just goes off. hits on these two girls, puts his arm around both of them and walks off them. And then I never see him again. I'm just like, bye, man. Like, that man loves pickup.
Think he got a make out, maybe two.
I bet he got a make out. Yeah. So, yeah. So, and since those early days, you know, I had some videos that went semi-viral. I moved the company from, well, company, let's say, the proto version of the company early days, moved over to Europe in, I think, 2012, because I'd started running the Euro Tour, which is like a traveling 10-day boot camp. And then things really started kicking off once I moved to Europe. We get along with the Germans and the Austrians and the Swiss and the Norwegians and stuff. They seem to like our kind of Aussie style. So, yeah, and since then I've been bouncing around the globe like you, coaching God knows how many programs, branched out not just day game natural style pickup, which I guess is, you know, kind of my bread and butter, but we moved into a lot of inner game stuff, meditation, and we started running like more specialty courses. Like we have a retreat on my farm in Portugal where we do a whole bunch of meditation and rewilding and psychedelics, and I also run probably the world's only live 7-day sex course with real women, where you get to learn about everything from Tantra through to BDSM. So that's something I've been focusing in the last 5 years, let's say, as I become, you know, well, as I've moved more into the sexuality training parts of this world. And also have a farm in Portugal where I grow olive trees, and I'm building a replica of the Hanging Garden of Babylon, because I'm into all sorts of other shit aside from chicks as well.
That farm is fucking legit. I would call it, I mean, I feel like calling it a farm, at least in the US, kind of like doesn't do it justice, you know, because farm has like this, you think of cows and rows of crops, right? It's, I don't know. I feel like it's more of like a compound.
It's a wonderland. A wonderland. Yeah, it's my own little world. So yeah, it has a walled compound with a 200-year-old house, and then yeah, forests and rivers, and it's a really, really beautiful place. And with, as someone who has an extraordinarily chaotic life, for my mental health, I need to go and spend time in nature and chill out, because often I'm doing something very weird and extreme. So I like to balance things out, or try to anyway.
Well, it's cool that you've incorporated so many different aspects into your coaching. And I guess technically, you know, the first collaboration wasn't an official collaboration or anything, but like you guys were running your elite program in New York.
Right.
You know, you contacted me saying you guys wanted to do some social circle stuff in New York. I had the model houses there and that sort of going on. And we collabed because it was a very cool thing. I'm not sure if you guys still did it, but it was like your most advanced students. And it was like four events. One was the sex workshop, I think, right? Another one was like an inner game. Maybe like some of the ayahuasca.
Vision Quest.
What?
Yes, yeah. There was ayahuasca involved.
Right. Yep. And then one was like the thing we did in New York, which is kind of like the social circle bottles and models and club thing. And then from that, I ended up kind of getting that invite to do that Maldives yacht party. So of course I invited you guys first, and we had a lot of fun in the following, you know, 7 to 9 months of raging on yachts and villas and
yes. So. Yes, yes. Oh, that reminds me. I there was one like blog I saw once, or someone sent me, which was like a hit piece on you and me, actually. And they used as their evidence, you remember we were on the yacht and there was, you know, 20 girls were doing a photo shoot, and then we were like, oh, I'm going to jump in that. So like, you know, one of us jumped in and took some photos, and then you jumped in and took some photos. And then they used that as evidence. They're like, see, same yacht, same girls. And I'm like, yeah, we're on the same holiday together.
Yeah, we're
and
buddy.
Robbie was just over there. And then he was like, yeah, I'll take a photo too. Where's the conspiracy here, dudes? Yeah, we were both partying together on the same yacht with the same girls. Yes, we were.
guilty as charged. I mean,
yes,
guilty. Why would friends do that? That's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess in the pickup
community,
that's frowned upon, you know?
Yeah, well, I was there. Well, and in some ways, I kind of miss that kind of jealousy and like infighting as well. Because remember when like all the fights were just about whose opener was right, you know, whether direct or indirect or natural or canned, and everyone was having their debates about that. And that was kind of sweeter days before it became all about global politics. Yeah,
good point.
I don't know how your memory is these days, because I've lived so many lives and because I'm an old school stoner as well. Like, when you brought that up, I was like, oh yeah, of course, we did all that stuff as well. And so, Robbie, you were absolutely the OG when it came to that, to the bottles and models world, when me and Liam and Alex were first kind of hanging out with you in that scene. That was quite earth shattering for us and for me, in terms of like seeing, because all of us were street approach and night game, cold approach guys, and we did that all the time, and any girl that we ever met was going to be because we rolled up to her somewhere and said some stuff. You were the pioneer getting involved with certain characters in the East. I don't know. Can we say, we probably shouldn't say his name. Actually it's all over the sun, right? He's got those articles where he's, yeah. Right. Yes. So yeah.
Good old Vitaly. We hooked up with the guy who was arrested in Dubai with the butt squad, 18 naked girls on a balcony, which I drove him to the airport for. I said, doing what you like to do, like all the naked girls everywhere, photographs, that's fun, but I wouldn't recommend it in Dubai, especially you being a and they love it over there. They don't give a shit. They're like, they're all doing it. And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, just be careful. And then a few days later, he's in jail.
Yeah, he's right. They are all doing it, but they're doing it on the inside of the window, not the outside of the window.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. What a one of a kind. It was you who kind of led us down the yellow brick road into this different type of like seduction, social circle, high coveted value women. And it was interesting, really interesting, because there was a very steep learning curve, because it was such a different type of game.
Right.
And I remember when we were first on, when I went with you first time to the Maldives, and you wouldn't even remember this because it was just us hanging on the beach, but we were in the water, and we were talking to that tall redheaded girl, BFOC, butt full of cum.
Ah, yes.
Right. Do you like that I remember that?
That's amazing. The violinist,
the violinist.
Yes.
BFOC. And
amazing.
Because the thing was, I was just floundering. Like, even though I was like, maybe you couldn't see it, I was just like trying to act cool. I'm everything's fine. I was like, what is Robbie saying? He seems to be like, there's something about what's going on that I don't quite get yet. And even though I'd been in the industry for so long and I picked up God knows how many women in all sorts of scenarios, there was something very different about the dynamic, where there's a lot of, there's a lot of high value women in the space, and pickup, as we would have known it in the old days, doesn't work. It just simply doesn't work. And I remember actually I tried, because like I'd been told that, don't approach the girls, don't try and run game on them, don't try and escalate. And when I first got on the boat, I was like, yeah, but I'm gonna,
what am I gonna
surely
do?
I can just. And so I remember going over to like, just fuck it. I walked over to one girl and I said, hey, how you doing? She's like, fine. I said, so have you been to the Maldives before? And she just looked at me and gave me that look of like, do not talk to me for the rest of the trip. And I was like, yes, madam. I'm like, I am 100% blown out from this one. Okay, there's something I need to learn here. So yeah, it was like, and by day three or four, I'd figured it out. But yeah, that really gave me a different level of seduction understanding, and like helped me kind of step into a different type of archetype, like the man that is chosen, right? Like the man that as opposed to the man that is chasing, which is quite advanced in a way. Like it's not just a case of like being in the club and doing nothing and acting cool and the chick's going to come over there. But yeah, it was, That was you know, definitely changed my life that first trip. So yeah, thank you for being the example of it. Cause as I was watching you just being chill, talking kind of nonsense, right. Like, you know, nothing gamey, nothing, not qualifying, not challenging, not really even flirting, just being like really chill and in the moment. Because, you know, I thought about instantly as I'd asked that question to that girl, I realized that that girl and no one here wants to talk about anything outside of this place, because any question where it's like, what do you like to do? It's like, we're doing it. Here we are. Mm. Like, this is what we, you know, this is where we are sharing in this experience right now, which is a peak experience. And in order to, for it to be sexy, you just have to settle into it.
Right.
So yeah, that was some cool learnings.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting insight. And, you know, I have to thank you guys for like, I mean, I think most of those trips wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for basically that unofficial collaboration, you know, we did.
Right.
Because like Vitaly was like, hey, like if you can find some guys, we can do this. And I'm like, oh shit, who do I know that's gonna, oh duh, I should hit up Liam and James. yeah, that was a lot of fun. And just, yeah, crazy learning, because I mean, I had been exposed to it a bit before, just kind of doing the bottle service stuff and like just understanding, like when you show up to a table full of like 8 girls and 2 promoters and you try to run game on the girls, they're just like, what are you doing? Like, we don't want to talk to you. It's a loud nightclub. But when you're just like chill and enjoying and just like talking to the guys, the ratio just kind of does the work for you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But I think you had the record, maybe the record for on one of those trips of like every girl, I don't know if even want to call it a record, it's just like every girl would like somehow get really jealous and leave your room and be like, I don't know what just happened to me sexually, but I just had like a sexual revolution or awakening, like constantly here. When you stayed with me in New York, I remember literally hearing spanking and like sounds coming from your room for like, it had to have been over an hour. And I'm sitting down on the couch with Liam and I'm like, is he still spanking? Like, what is going on in there? Like, you know, like, so whatever you were doing on the sexual end of things was like next level. And I know you put a shitload of like energy and time and resources into that. How did you kind of like when did you really start focusing on that? And how do you feel like that, I guess, impacted just your overall sort of game? Cause I guess my question is, or more of a statement, I tend to err a little bit on the lazier side when it comes to that stuff. Like for me, having to like I would be down to study more. I've studied it a lot, but yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if I have a question, but like maybe I'm just lazy, or maybe I don't see some of the benefits, or maybe I'm already pretty advanced anyways. That's from a personal level. But I think from a basic level, most guys, even to get to where I am, which is far below where you are, an extreme level of mastery. So if you could speak to that.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I'm a sex nerd and I've been, I've been studying it, you know, all my life since I lost my virginity, but I think like there was a number of partners that popped up in my life who were particularly experimental. And I feel quite grateful to some of the earlier women in my life who were like quite open about their sexuality, could explain what they liked and didn't like, and helped me to open channels of communication. Cause I think that's like, if we were to look at what is the, if I had to pick a number one problem that happens between men and women sexually, it's lack of communication. And I don't mean that in some fluffy way. I mean that in a very, very practical way of like being able to speak to, this is what I want, this is what I don't want, this is how I like it. You know, here's something I wanted to try. And a lot of women don't feel comfortable to express those kinds of things because of fear of judgment or thinking that their desires might be weird or unusual. And so with some of those early partners who were very expressive, I learned ways of just opening up dialogue. And so I think very early on, I started to have very honest and raw conversations with not every sexual partner, but most. And I had a real desire to learn and to understand the intricacies of female sexuality. And it was apparent to me very early on that there was not one way to do it, right? So you couldn't just learn, you know, get on the internet and learn the five best sex tips or whatever, learn a bit of squirting, a bit of spanking, and do these 5 things, and then you're going to be a master. the nuance of it and the subtlety and the variation between each woman and the same woman on a different day, for example, is huge. And that's what always fascinated me. Like, it was that little bit of difference. It was the surprises that were going to come out with each woman. And I started becoming really addicted to, or really into, finding out what was below the surface for her. And I guess, you know, maybe partially it was ego at the time, but it was like, I wanted to be the best she'd ever had, but I wanted to find out her secrets. And, you know, most women do have sexual secrets. They have taboos and they have fantasies, desires that they don't speak of, or that they're worried about, or they feel ashamed of, but they're boiling under the surface. And I learned to hold a space, which was completely non-judgmental. And that would be the other thing I think that often holds men back sexually, is that they have levels of, whether it's unconscious or conscious, levels of judgment on women, you know, that if they're if they want to have anal sex, or they like spanking, or want to dress up or something, that makes her something. It makes her weird or a slut or easy or broken or something, making assumptions about what someone's desire says about their character, which is almost always incorrect.
Right.
So, yeah, I just really apprenticed myself to this art form. And I think, yeah, I'm lazy in quite a lot of ways in my life, but, you know, I very rarely get up before 11 a.m. and, you know, like, I'm not like a grinder. I'm not like one of those. I mean, I am in short bursts if I need to, but I'm not one of those guys like Alex, who I respect this, but, you know, where they get up at a certain time and they fucking punch through 19 different tasks and everything is optimized. I'm not really like that. But when it comes to sex, that's something I seem to have quite a discipline about. And I'm not satisfied to have sex with a woman and for her not to walk away or stumble away having had a life-changing event. So, you know, I have done a bunch of formal study. Like, I've studied, you know, I did a tantra teacher's training. So I wouldn't say I'm a high level tantra operator, but I know how to do it. I know how to coach women through it. And I became friends with a professional, Australia's highest paid male dominant, right? So the opposite of a dominatrix, the male is a dominant, who gets paid by women to do horrific, nasty things to them all day and fulfill their fantasies. And hanging out with him, because he was also like deeply into spirituality, had deep understanding of female psychology. So hanging out with him, going to some, you know, going to fetish parties and watching him at work, I picked up a lot in terms of the skill sets, particularly when it comes to impact and dominance and role play and pushing women into their extremes of pleasure. And so, yeah, over time, I just blended these subtler, like, Eastern arts with the more intense, extreme kink or BDSM arts. And yeah, when I'm with a new woman, or every woman that I'm with, I really have a sense of like, I'm going to figure you out, and probably fairly quickly, but I'm going to figure you out. But I'm not going to come at it with a sense of arrogance, like, because I have so much experience and I've done this a million times before, I got you. I know what you need. I think it's really important to come with a beginner's mind and a humility, probably to most things in life, but especially to sex, because, yeah, she is a new mystery box that I'm opening. And even though there's patterns, even though there's certainly things that often work with most women, like, for example, I would say most women like, and this, they say, done well, like having their hair pulled, being choked, and being spanked. Not all women. Some women hate having their hair touched because you've got grotty hands and they just went to the salon. Some women feel claustrophobic with a hand around their neck. I've never really had anyone say they don't like spanking, but, you know, it's like most women will like those things, but there'll be so much variation in terms of the pressure, the amount, the tone of it, right? So whether I'm playfully spanking her or whether I'm going with a real authoritarian, nasty kind of dominant vibe. So in order to figure that stuff out, you do need to drop your ego and arrogance and ask questions, communicate.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Be willing to learn.
The bit on, because of course there's all the techniques and mindset and the how-to that you pick up along the way, but it's that ability to really be curious about the girl that you're with and, you know, feel into her and see how she's different, because it's so true. It's like every woman is so significantly different. It's like, obviously a lot of the same techniques and the same this and same that are going to lead to pleasure, but it's how you approach that. And just taking that sort of, like you said, curious mindset into it versus the like, oh yeah, I know how to get you off, which is so arrogant and such a turnoff for girls. I think that's so important.
Yeah, I'll give you guys a little tip. It might be useful. So if let's say you want to improve the way that you're touching a girl's pussy, right? So it's a girl you don't know that well, and you want to learn about how she likes to be touched. One thing I found is if you ask a woman, is this good, whatever it is, she'll probably just say yes.
Right.
All right. So because if the answer's no, then she has to worry about, well, how is he going to respond? How's his ego going to respond if I give him a negative? Then I'm going to have to try and explain it to him, and it's easier just to fake it and wait, see if the next guy's any better.
Exactly.
Oh, women. I'm sorry, ladies. So because there's a lot of very bad sex out there for women. It's, you know, I've interviewed dozens and hundreds of women actually, because, you know, for my products and for my personal life, I often do post-sex debriefs, and I talk to them about what other guys do or I want to know. And there's a lot of complaints, but primarily it's around this kind of thing where they're doing something that they think it's right, but it's wrong, and they're not able to communicate. So if, let's say in that example, rather than asking her, is it good? It's better to say, is this the right spot, or should I move in any direction, right? Or show me the pressure that works for you, right? So I might, let's say I've got, she might put her hand on her pussy, and I'll put my hand over the top of it so that I can, and then I'll say, touch your pussy like you like it so I can feel, right? So in that way, she gets to instruct me without needing to say a yes or a no. I'm only really giving her options to make it better, right? So, or I'm going down on her and I'll say to her, let me know if you need more pressure or less, or you need me to change the direction, right? And I want you to give me feedback. So giving permission to the woman to give you feedback is a big deal, and really only giving her options for it to improve as opposed to a binary. That one I found is most likely to get for her to be able to give you an honest answer, in which case you can actually learn.
Yeah, that's super important. So it's just to recap, it's not giving her like, tell me what you like. It's a very sort of show me with your hand, but also I'm going to kind of do it at the same time, or she's going to, I'm trying to find the language. It's like, not like she's coaching you, but she's just more, you're kind of giving her a small subset of options, right?
I'm guiding her to guide me.
Right.
Yeah. Guiding her to guide me. So that, yeah. And like, sometimes I'll precurse things by saying a statement like, I really want to understand your body, and so I want you to feel totally free to give me feedback at any time. If there's something you really like, let me know and I'll do more. You know, if there's something you don't like, tap me or say the safe word. I won't be offended. Right. So giving like that kind of thing is really important, because I've talked to lots of women about this, and I say, okay, do you try and give feedback? And they so commonly say, yeah, I try, but then the guy says, gets pissed off, or, you know, I've heard girls say that guys literally say, I know what I'm doing. You just relax, you know, that kind of thing. Because I think often what's happened there is that the guy did know what he was doing with his girlfriend, last girlfriend he had. And so he knows the moves that work for her. And he's like, cool, I got this women thing. I got this pussy thing. And then he thinks he can use the same, you know, exactly the same technique, same pressure, same speed on every other girl, and has a sexual arrogance about it, as opposed to the sexual explorer who's like, cool, new pussy. Let's give her permission to open up and explain to me whatever she wants. And I will happily hear the feedback and operate from it.
Are there some girls where you just kind of get the sense that they don't want to communicate at all? Or are there ever times where you just feel like too maybe uncomfortable or awkward to generate any conversation? Because I feel like that comes up when like it's a really drunken hookup, or it's like, you know, maybe like just one of these more like sort of spur of the moment situations where communication seems a little bit out of place. Would you have any advice for that sort of situation?
Yeah, sure. Because look, I mean, when I was, I don't know, my first dozen partners or whatever, I was a silent ninja in bed. because I thought like, because I thought from watching porn, I was like, it's so annoying hearing this guy grunting and giving a running commentary through the whole thing. It sounds so cheesy. That's lame. I'm not going to do that. Right. So instead, I was just stoic and silent. Right. And I think back to the poor girls that had to deal with that. Like, what is this guy doing back there?
Is he even enjoying it?
Yeah. So, you know, I went from that to, again, it was a female partner who kind of opened things up, because I had a girlfriend who just talked a lot in bed and would say words like cock and pussy, right? She would say, I want your cock and take my pussy and that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, that's fucking hot. Yeah, I'm going to start saying some stuff. And so, yeah, as coming as a guy that this wasn't a natural thing to do, I started to, you know, add dialogue and discussion into the bedroom. And for the online course that I'm putting together at the moment, I really looked into this and thought about, how do I break down the concept of dirty talk and communication into chunks that men can really, like, you know, absorb and understand. So what I would say, if you're looking at kind of introducing verbal play into your bedroom, because it can be intimidating at first to think, well, I need to do dirty talk, which means I need to create some erotic poetry to turn the girl on with my fancy words or something, right? No, you don't need to do that.
Well, it's so good, just to interrupt you for 1 second, it's so good to have that distinction, because it can really be confusing, because on one hand, you're like, wait, I'm supposed to figure out what she wants, so I'm coming at it from like a scientific brain, which is so different mm-hmm. than like the dirty talk, like sort of more like masculine animalistic thing, and guys, I think, have a mm-hmm. real struggle integrating that together overall, so please continue.
Right. Yeah. So the basics that I would give to guys is to break things down into these components. The simplest thing to operate with is voice commands, right? So actually giving orders, let's say, to the woman. And then on the flip side of that is rewards, right? So, I mean, this relates quite, there's quite a lot of correlation or crossover to the idea of qualification in seduction, right? So if we're qualifying a woman in seduction, we ask her about a quality she has, and instead of immediately validating her for it, so I'm like, okay, so what's your life's plan? I don't know, I wouldn't ask that question, but like, okay, a big question. So, you know, what's important to you? And she says, shopping or whatever. And you're like, wow, that's so amazing. You like shopping? I can't believe a girl likes shopping. And I reward her for a very low level of investment. That's not qualifying. Whereas if I said, well, yeah, I know all girls like shopping, but what else? Is there something else? Now there's a challenge, and if she's invested, she's going to have to dig deeper and give me something more, right? And then I might reward her as she says, well, yeah, I'm also, you know, a rhythmic gymnast and I'm saving the whales this summer. Then I'll be like, well, okay, so there's much more to you than just shopping. That's awesome. Cool. Which there was a little bit of a neg in there as well, I guess. So if we then cross that over into the bedroom, because a lot of men's experience sexually is coming from a beggar's frame. Especially this can happen in longer term relationships where, you know, a guy wants a blowjob from his girlfriend. And so what does he do? He kind of begs, hints, you know, even like whinges about, or is like, oh, come on, babe, you know what, you know, like that kind of begging frame, which is, doesn't turn the woman on, and she can't respect you if you're begging her.
It's like a negotiation. So, they say anytime you're trying to negotiate desire, it kills it.
Right. Absolutely. No. Yes. Cause it's either ignited or it's not. We can't like discuss it and turn it on by looking at like, well, let's look at the facts here. You know, I licked your pussy last week, which is only fair that, so no, that doesn't work. So I'm very dominant in the bedroom, right? I've studied BDSM and I am a dominant, but I'm not the one that you imagine, not the one covered in leather with the whip who's like barking orders and beating someone, although I certainly can do that. The leather, yeah, I would do that. But I'm more on the sensual dominant side of things. So taking command of a woman can be a very sexy, sensual and delicate thing. Or it can be a rough thing. But the way that I start introducing that is through simple voice commands. And this is a really good way to start introducing just talking at all in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. Come over here, you know, look at me, turn around, stick your ass out, get on the bed, spread your legs. Like so many of the questions that guys ask me, like, how do I get a girl to, and the answer is tell her to do it,
right? Right?
Whatever they're about to say. Because I remember that, you know, when I, the first couple of girls I was having sex with as a teenager, missionary and thinking, so there's that doggy thing. How can I get her into that position? Because it was like, it seems like a mathematical problem because right now she's on her back and I wanted to get on her knees. And that's complicated. Yeah. Until the day when I just kind of like went, turn around. And she did. I was like, oh, okay, just say it. So that's a simple one that guys can take away in terms of simple directions and commands and make sure they have a downwards tonality at the end, right? Mm-hmm. So if I said, come over here, turn around, could you shake your tits? It doesn't sound like I deserve it or that I know what I'm doing. It sounds unconfident. Come over here, turn around, get on your knees, mm-hmm. right? So you do that with that kind of downward tonality that's very assertive and it's clear what you want. And then what I'll do, and you can keep this as a basic formula, so don't think of it as like a rule, but I would go command, command, reward, or command, 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 reward. Yeah, so come here, turn around, stick your ass out. Oof, that peach is perfect. I need to eat it, right? So it's like I'm encouraging her, putting a little pressure on her, and then when she does something I like, then I reward her. And it is really important to reward her because if I just give her orders and there's no release and no appreciation, then she's like, why am I doing this?
Right.
And if I give her rewards every single time I tell her to do something, then it doesn't have any power. But stacking that where it's like pressure, 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 good girl, reward, turns women on. Mm. And the just a final point there is that it flips that power dynamic where as opposed to the like, oh, could I have or please miss or, you know, trying to like get something out of her. Instead, I'm the one who's in charge. And I will do things like, you know, hold her by the hair, hold my cock near her mouth and say please. And most beautiful women have never said please for anything.
Right.
Let alone a dick.
Wait. Yeah.
So that, but the psychological effect that has on a woman, if, you know, in the right context, is that she's now begging a man for his dick, which means this must be a very special man.
Right.
Like her respect for you, her attraction for you goes through the roof because that is the opposite of what most men are doing. So that's a good one you can take away that's kind of simple to start playing with is giving simple, clear commands and only one at a time. Don't like list five at a time because she'll get confused. You know, simple commands one at a time and then giving her specific rewards about how she's turned you on or how amazing she looks or how great that feels or whatever. Massively heightens things in the bedroom, and that is a simple way to open up a line of communication.
I love that because it's very applicable and it kind of gets into the psychology at the same time. That's an awesome tip or advice. When it comes to, and this might be a tough question to answer, but there's always this sort of trade-off between pleasing yourself and being selfish and pleasing her. I was always joking with my other fellow Jewish guys. You're half Jewish, right?
Quarter Jewish.
Quarter Jewish. Okay. The joke is that Jewish guys are the best lovers because they're so interested in pleasing the woman. But on the downside,
because they're so neurotic about it.
They're the least lazy, selfish lovers. But on the flip side, there is something to be said about just really kind of, you know, being selfish and expressing your own desire and what you want, as long as that doesn't involve being like a 30-second ninja comer. Do you have anything to say about that? Because I feel like guys can get kind of messed up in that whole sort of framework.
Definitely. I've got a good model that might help explain this. So there's this idea called the wheel of exchange. It's not originally my idea. It came from a therapist looking at kind of relationship dynamics between people in general, but it works really well as a model sexually. So if we were to think of like a circle cut into four quadrants, and in one quadrant we had take. Now, when I would ask what's the opposite of take, you might think that it's give, but it's not. The opposite of take is to allow. Right. Mm-hmm. So if I wish to take something off somebody and they let me, like, mm-hmm. then they're allowing me to, you know, have my desire fulfilled. So we have this. So in these quadrants, we have take, and then on the opposite side, we have allow. in one of the other quadrants, we have give. So the opposite of give is to receive, right? So it's not take,
right?
Right. So if I'm, you know, I give someone a present and then they have the action of receiving and feeling, you know, whatever nice feelings they feel over that. A good sexual relationship will kind of cycle between these four quadrants. Like an unhealthy one where, let's say, there's a man, for example, who only takes. And so, you know, the girl gets home from work. He, you know, grabs her by the hair, bends her over the piano, rips up her skirt, fucks the shit out of her for 3 minutes, and then goes off. Now, that would be a really, really hot thing to do from time to time, right? That, because what does the woman get to experience in that moment? She gets to experience allowing the man's desire to take precedence, take control. She gets to, you know, feel his beast and to see what he's like when he's kind of unleashed, right? So, and this is something that women tend to find really sexy and really, you know, powerfully arousing within a within context. And whenever I say any of this stuff, whenever I say women like, it's not like the woman that on the street with some random stranger. It's like in the context of consent and that, you know, she wants to be there.
Right.
But so in that situation, if the guy does that, you know, from time to time, fucking hot. But if that's what he does every time, you know, just fucking throat fucks her and then falls asleep, then there's a massive imbalance in the relationship. So she only gets to experience allowing, right? On the other side, if we have our good Jewish guy who's pleasing his lady.
The mensch.
So he's always giving. So that's the guy that always, you know, he read that book or heard that thing that you've got to make the woman come first every time, which is not true. Yeah, it's a good idea. It comes from a good place. It's a good idea to try and make your woman come, but you don't need to make her come first every time, because then what happens is I'm giving, and it puts the woman in this position where she only is receiving, and often there's all this expectation then, because that guy is trying to get his gratification through her, through how much he's pleased her. And she'll notice that after some number of sessions where, he always, you know, goes down on me for 30 minutes before he has sex with me. He wants me to come. Now it's an expectation. Now it's a thing that I have to do kind of as a covert contract for his weird pleasure or whatever. And then it turns her off.
Right.
Right. So, you know, so we have these kind of two sides of these unhealthy wheels of exchange. A good sexual relationship will cycle between those. So when it's time to take your woman, take your woman, right? When it's time, when you wish to give, then give sincerely. And be aware that you want to have a balance of those things, that, okay, if you find that you are selfishly taking too much, then you might want to check yourself and go, all right, in order for both of us to explore, you know, the totality of our sexuality, then I should let her take sometimes. Right. And I've talked to girls and I've even drawn this for them and showed them the thing. And I'm thinking of one lover recently, actually, because I was explaining it to her and she's like, well, what could I do to take? And I said, you could rip down my pants and say, give me that cock, my little fuck boy, or whatever.
Right.
You know, you could tell me to lie on the bed and you could come and dance for me and tell me not to touch you. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you're gonna take my frustration or whatever, you know, and just she suddenly just like everything opened up. She's like, oh wow, yes, yeah, there's all these sorts of things I could take. And so that was a girl who was submissive in nature and, you know, overall preferred the dynamic where I'm in control, I'm taking or leading, let's say, she's receiving or allowing, but giving her that opportunity and the encouragement to flip it sometimes meant that I got to see this whole other side of her sexuality that actually she'd never really even seen before as well. And it's fucking sexy to see a woman step into a wildness and to, you know, flip the script and to take you or tie, hold you down and ride you like a pony or whatever. So yeah, like in terms of that, what you don't want to do is mix them, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to be like pretending to give when actually you're trying to take, which is the classic nice guy kind of covert contract. And maybe I'll just wrap up this point with the idea of a blowjob, because a blowjob can be taken and it can be given, and you can also allow it and you can also receive it, right? So like, and even within the same blowjob,
you can have, right?
So many options. Because yeah, you can have a thing where, you know, she starts and she's doing her thing and I'm just holding her hair out of the way like a gentleman should. And right now she's giving, right? So she's doing her thing. She's pleasing me. She's showing me her techniques, and I'm receiving.
Right.
And if I was to try to like grab her head and take control in that moment when she's that's not the space she's in. She wants to actually show me what she's got, or she wants to, you know, do her best technique and whatever. While she's trying to give, I'm trying to take, then it doesn't really work. Right. Whereas at some other point, maybe within the same blowjob or same session, you know, I scoop up her hair and wrap it around my wrist and then, you know, say, swallow that cock, my naughty little slut, which is a nice thing to say. And now I'm taking the blowjob, and now she gets to experience the allowing. And that's the, you know, where she's totally submitting and she's, you know, choking or whatever. What she's getting off on the fact that I'm getting off on taking her. All right. So you can start to see that even with the same physical movements, that there can be a very different tone or a different, very different intention to those. So you want to just be kind of clear and clean about those, because don't feel ashamed to take in the right context, because women fucking love it when their man takes them, because it shows that he is hungry and lusting after and he can't control himself. And that, what does that mean about her? It means that she's fucking sexy.
Right.
You know, she's a totally, you know, irresistible sex object, and I can't stop myself. She wants to feel that for sure. And she also wants to feel the thing where it's like, lie down, sweetie, spread your legs, you relax. Now I'm going to please you. Don't worry about anything, right? So cool. Now I'm in the giving space and she's receiving. And in this way, everyone gets to experience the, you know, the full kind of spectrum of their sexual desire.
Well, that's a great model, because also as a guy, you can immediately start to, you know, just ask yourself the question, which area am I comfortable and where am I uncomfortable? And what are those points to kind of lean in on? Like, oh, I'm great at receiving or allowing, but I'm not so great at taking or was giving. The classic sort of nice guy, I think, is going to often fall into those categories that you mentioned.
Yeah. So. And look, I understand that for a lot of guys, the idea of taking can be synonymous with abuse, or, you know, just being an abuser of some sort. And that's understandable, like, because I don't want guys to think that to be a man that's able to take sexually means that you don't care about the other person, that you're using them. I mean, you might be using them in a play, you know, in the context of a fantasy, but like that there is still full respect, or can totally be full respect and care when you are, you know, aggressively taking a woman. I know that for a lot of guys, because, you know, I teach these live sex classes with normal guys, like guys who are white collar professionals usually, who come in and they're like, cool, I want to learn all the sex stuff. And then on day whatever, three or so, we move into spanking. I've seen this a number of times where, and we do live spanking classes. So we have the girls lined up and the dudes are there and we're practicing, which is, those are the moments where I step back and I go, what is my life? How did I end up here?
How did this come to be? Oh, I created it.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't I a hippie musician at some point? Yeah, and often, like at first, the guys are like very tentative and confused. And I've had a lot of guys say things like, "Am I doing this because, like, just to have power over her, and she puts up with it?" Something like that. I'm like, okay, right. We need to have a talk about the psychology of what's going on here, because there is often misunderstandings about the difference between consensual use of force and passion and power and, you know, restraints and spanking and choking and all that kind of stuff, and actual disrespectful, violent abuse. Even right. though sometimes if you walked in on the scene, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Right.
Because it may look, I mean, it depends on the level of extremeness that people want, but it can be, you know, quite rough. But I think it's important for guys to like investigate, as you said, to like where the areas that where they might feel a trigger, or they're like not comfortable with that idea of taking, and what they think that means, right? Because they may well be misunderstanding female sexual psychology. And the reality is that I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a lot of women, and not just women, who've, you know, had sexual abuse or whatever. It's just normal every day from every single demographic and every age group. So many women love to be controlled in the bedroom, to feel a man's force. And many, many of them like to have impact, right? So they like to be spanked. Usually spanking is the, you know, the ubiquitous thing that most people like. Others might like much harsher use of sting pain with crops and floggers and whips and stuff. But most girls really like spanking. And it's not about abuse. It's not about hurting her. It's really much more about having a psychological impact of putting her into the present moment, shocking her out of her thoughts, feeling the man's power, and that the sensations when you're in a heightened sexual state, having spanks is like actually sexually arousing, right? Because it sends shock waves through the pelvis into the pussy. She gets to feel the power. It sounds nasty. It sounds kind of dangerous, but it's not dangerous at all. So yeah, I think that's something for guys to kind of take away, to have a think about, to investigate, because I've seen it be a major blockage for a lot of guys that they don't seem to be at it. They can't get through that barrier because they feel like they don't want to be a bad person. And I'm telling you, you can still be a good, respectful, nice dude that looks after his woman and give her a bit of a belting from time to time.
And she might need it and want it. So what else crazy happens during these sex classes? I mean, you've told me offline, but
yeah. Right. Well, so basically we run this 7-day course. We have 6 female trainers, very open-minded, fun, sexy girls. And then usually 6 students and myself and Shane Matthews, and usually one of the other guys is assisting. And we take it's vast majority of it is practical, very little theory. And so the guys, we basically stack it and layer in such a way that, say, on day one, we start with some of the subtler stuff in terms of tantric breathing, of really tuning in with your partner, syncing up your breathing and your body movements. Because a lot of the time, I've had these many experiences like this back in the day, especially drunken hookups, where it's kind of 2 people masturbating, using each other's bodies, banging, slapping against each other in a not particularly intimate or kind of coordinated way.
Right.
So we start with this like attunement, being able to do simple things like, just push a woman down on a bed, get between her legs, but to actually learn ways to make that fluid, to make that like a dance, right? As opposed to, 2 bits of meat slapping against each other. So we start with that kind of stuff. We work through voice commands, as I was explaining before. So we start to layer the actions where the guys start with, okay, how do I start to command the woman with my voice? And then we move into manhandling. How do I start to command the woman with my body, spinning her around, throwing her on beds, leading her in a way that feels really comfortable and sexy? And it starts building from there. So by the time we get to day, I think it's 6 or so, we have one lady who comes in who's very, very sexually open and a voyeur. Like, she really gets off on having lots of people watching her. So she loves this class. And so everyone puts on a rubber glove and we go into my room, and one by one, another one of those moments of like, what am I doing? My mother would, I'm glad my mother doesn't use the internet. And then the guys practice, we demo it, practice rubbing the pussy, fingering, squirting. And so, it's very, very hands-on. And then also with anal.
Oh, hey. Wait, sorry. Hold the thought on the anal sex. But the squirting thing is so interesting, because that's how I learned to make a woman squirt. Was I was at a sex party, and me and my girlfriend at the time, hooked up with this other couple, and he would just went in there, bam, 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 and like, she's squirting, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I've never been able to make her do that. He's like, dude, you just need to use this technique. And he like showed me with my arm and my hand, like, what to do. And awesome. Like, it unlocked the mystery. And like, now, some of the girls in Kiev were like, yeah, he's a squirt master. Cause it's so easy. It's not like it's, right. And of course every pussy is a little bit different, but having that literally hands-on training, was the difference. Cause I had read tons of squirting books and like tried to figure out how to do it, but it wasn't until he actually like showed me that I was able to do it. So
yeah absolutely. I mean, when it comes to the the actual muscle memory of that kind of thing, particularly with things like spanking, because I think like of all the things that I've taught physically in sex classes, spanking is the thing that guys struggle with the most, actually, to get really good, because it requires this ability to have a total like looseness and floppiness in your hand, which most, whenever I say most, I may be wrong, but a lot of men are very stiff and rigid in their upper bodies, especially guys that do a lot of gym work. Hmm. They may be really strong, but not very subtle and not particularly in tune with their body to be able to create chains of motion. So, you know, a thing like that, because doing bad spanking is much worse than doing no spanking. Hmm. Like it's just like hitting with a lump of wood.
Right.
So yeah, having real live butts to practice on, and the girls go, no, yes, left, right, do it harder. they give very, very clear feedback. And you know, from all the other techniques as well. Yeah, it's takes it from something where it's like a theoretical thing or a thing that's intellectual and conceptual to, okay, this is real, now I can actually do it. So yeah, another funky thing that happens in that class is the same girl is I do demonstrations of how to do anal sex. Now I'm an aficionado of anal sex. It's quite important to me. I know some guys are like, eh, that's where the poo comes out, but I'm like, yeah, but that's also where the dick can go in.
Yes.
if you're not into it, that's fine. Don't worry. Don't force yourself if you're not into it. But I definitely am, and I have anal sex with about 80% of the women that I'm with, because I always try it and I know how to do it perfectly and I know how to do it in a way that's not going to hurt at all. And so I've retrained a lot of women who, you know, most women have had anal as like a pretty shitty experience with their boyfriend in high school who tried to shove it in thinking it might just pop in.
Right.
And it hurt and it felt weird and they're like, nah, not doing that again. So yeah, I often imprint them on that. So yeah, for the class,
that's always the best for me. It's when a girl's like, "No, I hate it," blah blah blah, and then I'm like, "No, you just haven't had it done the right way." And then they're like,
"And she's
I
like,
love
that's what
it.
Every
it's
guy
my
says."
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, she says that's what every guy says. I say I know, but I'm actually telling the truth. I'll give you guys one tip on anal sex if they would like it. Mm-hmm. The secret, gents, on anal sex, you may think, okay, intuitively you would think, well, I need to get things in and out in order to loosen up the butt. No. Let's go that way. The anal sphincter is like a coiled muscle, and the way we want to stretch it is we actually want to stretch it side to side as opposed to in and out. Right, because that's what's going to actually loosen and open up the muscle there. So when you're first kind of probing with your thumb, let's say, or your finger, I wouldn't recommend popping it into the knuckle, right? Because that can be uncomfortable popping in and out. So just dipping until I've got my thumb in far enough that I can start to actually pull down or pull up or pull side to side. So I start to do these little stretches up and down, side to side. This is what will start to open and expand the sphincter. And then later, once she's warmed up enough to take your cock, same thing. Once you've got the head of the cock in, which you don't want to pop in and out like you see in porn, because that gaping, they have to be pretty experienced for that to work. And it seems to be, from the feedback, the uncomfortable part of good anal sex is the pulling it out at the end, right? It feels weird. And so there's ways that you can deal with that.
Spicy, hot, burning sensation, they say.
Yeah, and I guess it sort of feels like you're pooing something out, which you are in a way. Right. So, I mean, yeah, I can imagine it's weird. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, you know, when you actually get the head of the cock in, then the same thing, you can use it as a lever, basically, to like stretch side to side, up and down, bit of a circle, then idling, going in and out, then I'll do that, up and down, into that. And then you'll feel at some point the butt just gives up. All right, it's had enough and it just, suddenly it's just relaxed. Yeah, right. It's like, all right. To do what you want, and then you can start to fuck it properly. So there's your little anal tip for the day.
That's great. Very applicable again. And that's really the struggle, I think, with a lot of the sex content out there. It's that so much is so theoretical or it's on the opposite, which is just so mechanical. So guys get stuck in either the kind of woo-woo, airy-fairy, like sort of mindset, or they go too hard on like the tactical. So
right.
Been awesome.
Yes, that's definitely. And that's what I've, you know, attempted to do in the Sex God Masterclass and in my online version, which I'm launching now, is to, like, you know, for example, in the online course, I've got to count them, but it's hundreds of techniques, right? So it's everything from this, how to take a bra off through to how to, you know, fuck a girl in the ass and many other things in between. So I outline them in the way that, you know, men like, clinically, you know, very like broken down, exactly granular, step by step. But then what I do is I look at the layers of that, the layers of communication that lead you into that, and how it all ties together into an erotic and sensual experience, right? Because, yeah, I've talked to many women, you know, I'm always talking to women about their sex lives, and that also comes up commonly where they'll say, you know, I've had partners who are technically really good, but they're hyper-fixated on my orgasm and hyper-fixated on doing their tricks, right? Okay. So it's like, and once, which may be cool if he's got a bunch of good tricks, and the first night she's like, whoa, that was cool, bunch of things. But then the next time she's like, oh, okay, he's a got a bunch of tricks kind of guy, and you know, repeating the same ones with the same frequency in the same kind of order, this is going to, you know, lead to boring sex eventually anyway. So yeah, I would say what makes a masterful lover is the man that both has the technical toolkit, because you know there is a whole bunch of things you just need to know. You need to know female anatomy, you need to know, you know, where the G-spot is and how to stimulate it, you need to know you know, the exact correct angles to and curvature to spank a girl, right? So there is a whole bunch of like correct technical things to do, but so that the man has to have proficiency in a bunch of those, but it is the artistry and the way that that is all tied together, and the man that is delivering the techniques is most important, right? So it's like, for example, I've been to a bunch of, you know, kinky play parties in dungeons. It's not exactly my thing, but I've been there. And what I noticed, because I went with my buddy, Sir Dominic, he's, you know, professional Dom, and he did a big show, like a big scene. And you had this girl tied up to a cross and was, you know, doing all sorts of fantastically nasty things to her. And it was, the room was electric, right? It was like, he's a skinny dude, but he was terrifying, right? Like his like intensity and ferocity, which was also extremely controlled. Like he wasn't just thrashing her every single move. Every movement was precise. Every hit was perfect. But at the same time, there was a wild beast in the room. And a little bit later, another guy got up and did another show. And it was interesting to watch because he was technically perfect, but it was boring. It was like he was spotting it. It was like he was spotting her in the gym. Right, like he was going through the motions. He was doing, you know, he was doing all the right stuff, but there was no real man behind it. Right, there was no beast. There was no intensity. There was no intent. And so, for a man to be a great lover, you also have to go through your own personal sexual journey, right? To actually kind of reclaim both your wildness and your controlled aggressiveness, let's say, and your sensuality, right? Like, because, you know, for a lot of guys, that feels weird to even say the word, right? To actually like enjoy subtle touch and soft movement and breathing and the gooey sensations you get when you're inside a girl, almost imperceptibly moving and, you know, synchronizing your breath with her and so on. So yeah, it's a journey, right? Like most guys don't become very good at sex until a number of years. Like you need practice, you need to be with different partners, you need to go deal with your own sexual shame and issues. If all of us have some kind of, you know, sexual shame and issues of some sort, right. So being able to process that and reclaim and take ownership of your sexual desire is probably in some ways even more important than the technical skill set.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, when you do that and you go through that process, it's very therapeutic as well. And the downside of not doing it, like, well, there's a couple things. Like the bar is pretty low, I found. Most guys have just like such little interest, or maybe not interest, but like actual motivation to do anything, that the bar is quite low. But if you're to the point, like I'll see clients that are like, I'm having trouble after sleeping with a woman continuing to sleep with her. And would you say that that's almost always just due to a lack of skills in the bedroom? Because on the flip side, I've seen like guys who are like probably making a lot of mistakes as far as just interpersonal and social skills go. But if they are good in the bedroom, girls will keep coming back just to have that experience. I'm curious if you've experienced that.
Yeah, 100%. Like good, reliable dick is hard to find. And so, yes, you're totally right that you have like a massive margin for error if you're good in bed. Right. Like you can get away with having less conversational ability or, you know, less game or whatever. And I know, like, I'm very aware that some of my lovers don't even like me as a human. Like, I mean, that we don't have anything in common. They're not really particularly interested in me as a human, but they're like, that's where the good sex is. So I'll put up with James talking about ancient history for 10 minutes so we can get to that awesome sex. They just use me for my meat. But like, yeah,
you seem like you feel horrible. I know about that too.
No, it's losing lots. I know you've had this kind of experience as well. But you know, like in Kiev, it became the year before, back in the good old days. You know, my reputation meant that models, you know, these are extremely hot women, would deliver themselves to my door because they were told by whoever that, and specifically has been one of my greatest advocates. Like a number of girls have told me, "Do you know?" Like, yeah. She's like, when I met her, she said, there is this man called James. If you get a chance, fuck him. I was like, thanks, babe. Thanks for those referrals.
You fucked her after I did. So that's a feather in your cap.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. I have to say that the one with the braces.
Yes. Same one. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, like actually that was one of my better performances, I think, of the year with her. Actually, I was particularly inspired. So she definitely did get a very good session. And so, and I'm glad I did because it got some referrals. But yeah, like, okay, brags aside. Yeah, by the way, guys, just in case you didn't know, I'm pretty good at sex. Bragging aside, the point being is that, yes, like if you can satisfy a woman and you're right, the bar is very low, but not just satisfy. It's like, I mean, I think there's enough guys out there that can, you know, last longer than 10 minutes and can figure out how to lick a pussy and get, you know, make a girl come. Like, that's not that uncommon. But when it comes to, you know, giving her squirting orgasms, full body orgasms, tying her up, spanking her, taking her through, you know, different role plays, integrating both Tantra and kink or BDSM in the same kind of session. Like this is this kind of stuff that she's very likely to have ever seen and probably to ever see again, because there's not that many men who have taken the time to learn it.
Right.
And they're busy. So, yes, absolutely. Like I have, and again, it's not to brag, but it's like I get hit up regularly by women I haven't seen for a year or 6 months or whatever. And they're like, where are you? Are you coming to my city? Can I see you? And these are women who could get laid yesterday, you know, 10 minutes ago by fucking hot as fuck buff chads if they wanted to, like no problem because they're attractive women. But skinny old big nose fucking 43-year-old me is very often their choice. So yeah, it's like, and the other thing about being good in bed, one of the things that it gives you, so yeah, it gives you a lifetime of women wanting to come back and fuck you. It also gives you end game confidence.
Right.
So, you know, like I'm sure you've seen this with clients as well, where a guy will sabotage himself close to the finishing line because he doesn't think he can deliver, and maybe right. He can't. And everything that he's doing, the way he touches the woman, the way he looks at her, the way he leads her, is kind of unconfident or tentative because he's not sure, like, what am I going to do when I get her in bed? Whereas, you know, when you know, really know that, like, I got you, babe, she can feel that. She can sense it hours before you go home. It's in your look, it's in your touch, it's in the way you speak. And I, for myself, I find it means that, like, when I'm on dates or whatever, I'm not concerned. Like, I'm not trying to get this girl home. I'm not worried if I'm going to get laid or not, because, and it would be totally arrogant if I said this to her, but like what I am thinking is, like, it would be the silliest decision of your life not to come home with me. Right. Like, and it would be one of the best if you do. And so I'm presenting this gift to you, and if you're smart, you'll take it. And if not, someone else will very soon. So yeah, it really, I think it massively affects.
Oh, that's huge.
Your confidence and overall.
The hotter and more confident a woman is, the more she's going to feel that intuitively as well. And she's going to weed a guy out pretty instantly if she picks up on the, uncertainty in him and that lack of confidence. So
yeah,
that's huge.
And I think, yeah. And like guys might be triggered when they hear that kind of stuff where they're like, what? Well, fuck. Why do you know women so picky or whatever? It's like, well, you think about it. Like if she's attractive and she's smart and she's social, she can have a guy that is, you know, tall, good looking, rich, hot in bed, amazing in bed, fun, whatever. Like she has those options, and why wouldn't she take the best option? Like as we do, as we increase our sexual market value, you know, as we get better and whatever, then okay, cool, we upgrade what we're looking for. And we wouldn't, like if we were with a girl on a date, like I send girls home on dates. Like if she's been a brat or she's boring as batshit, or like I mean, I'll even send girls home. I'll stop having sex with them if it's really, really bad, right? So when you have choice, then you will choose the best.
Right.
So we can't all necessarily all be the best in terms of looks and height and things that we can't necessarily change, but we can be the best she's ever had in bed because, as you said, the bar is so low. The average man lasts 5 to 7 minutes in bed, according to Thianth. And has most of them don't know where a clitoris, you don't know how to locate a clitoris, and most don't care, yeah. Right? And so therefore, if you give a shit enough to ask questions and, you know, communicate, maybe using some of the techniques I said earlier, and work on practicing jerking off for 10 to 20 minutes at a time, which is a good practice to do as opposed to just knocking one out, because you are training for sex when you're jerking off, gents. So right. If you knock one out in 60 seconds, how do you think you're going to last long in bed? Because you this is sex training, right? So this is something that we can absolutely change and learn and get better and better and better with it, with age and with time. And it is something that sets you apart from 90-something percent of the men on the planet.
For sure. Yeah. I think so many guys are training themselves poorly with internet porn, rubbing one out really quick, you know, in hiding, yeah. Right? And
yeah.
That's how you're going to perform in bed. So,
yeah, maybe I should just say a few things on that, a little bit on that. Cause there's a crisis of male like addiction to pornography. Because it really, especially for the Generation X and Zoomer guys who grew up with it, because I don't know about you, but like, you know, the first porn I ever saw was on a VHS, and it was John Holmes in The Jade Pussycat from 1972 with this one VHS that me and my buddies passed around. So, you know, long before the days of high-speed internet.
I'm 3 years younger than you. So, yeah, same deal. Me and my buddies, I think we were like 7th or 8th grade. Like we got a hold of one of my friend's dad's VHS, and we all like sat around and like, oh wow.
Back when porn was a group activity, because right. It was so scarce. Yeah, so I mean, for the guys growing up in the generations where you're, you know, from 14 onwards or whatever, you're seeing high speed internet porn, it really fries your dopamine circuits. And you can look up Your Brain on porn.com for all the science on it. But you know, I've worked with lots of guys who've made themselves impotent at the age of 25, you know, like healthy young guys who have wired their sexuality to the act of jerking off looking at a screen. And it is problematic. So like I recommend to guys that they reduce or try and delete pornography from their life, not for any moral reasons, but because it will fuck you up in bed. And yeah, as you were saying, you know, doing it quickly and with that shame of like hiding and, you know, hope mum doesn't come in or whatever, doing it as like a stress release or a distraction or something like that, and doing it quickly, also with a very strong grip, right? So most men jerk off with a strong man's hand, which is not the same intensity as most pussies, right? So you can actually desensitize your dick by squeezing it too hard and jerking off 8 times a week or whatever, so that when you're inside a normal soft woman, that it's not stimulating enough. So yeah, the way that I train guys, you know, I teach them, use your masturbation as self-cultivating time where you are training to be awesome in bed. So do it in a position where there could be a woman. So you're not doing it hunched over. You know, do it with an upright spine, with your legs open, standing or seated or kneeling in a position that replicates what you could have sex in, because your body remembers, right? So if you repeat the same action over again, and your body will start to think, well, sex is me hunched over stressfully doing this for 3 minutes. Whereas if I please myself for 10, 20 minutes, bring myself up to like 90%, let go, take a big breath in, breathe out, let your arousal state drop a bit, and then do that through cycles, you could, you know, jerk off for 20 minutes or more, and you're learning to ride the cusp of your arousal. If you're not using pornography and just using imagination or sensation, then you're re-sensitizing yourself, you know, coming into touch with your own sensuality, let's say, and then gives you much, much better orgasm control as well. So yeah, be aware, like, because it's kind of like eating junk food all week and then going to the gym on Friday and trying to fix it all in that, right? It's like, you know, those two things don't fit together. And porn and that kind of masturbation is the junk food version of your sexuality.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. Makes perfectly crystal clear sense. One question I had for you was, so what I tried back in the day to become a multi-orgasmic, you know, I read Montauk Chia and tried the, you know, what do they call it? Semen retention, or where you circulate the orgasm, you know, practice like holding my urine stream to build the PC muscles. And I felt like I gave it the old better than the college try, but I could never quite get there. Have you been able to do that? Do you know anyone that has, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I relate to this, 'cause I think there was a bit of hype around this, whatever, mid 2010s or something. And it led into the NoFap kind of thing after that. But yeah, there was the idea of becoming multi-orgasmic, and there's, you know, The Multi-Orgasmic Man by Mantak Chia is the classic text on that. And there's some other good books on it. And so like you, yes, I also trained with these Scoop the Loop, or like the Microcosmic Orbit and different types of breathing. Mm-hmm. What I think, like, yes, I have experienced it, but it's not like you're jizzing out of all your fingers and your eyeballs or whatever. Like it's the sensation. I think it's probably a misleading title to say multi-orgasmic. It's a different thing. I think it's probably more closely related to like what a deep vaginal orgasm might feel like for a woman, where it's like, it's more like an electricity running through your body. So it's not an intense.
Then, 'cause I did feel that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it. Sorry to cut you
off. Yeah, because it's like, it's not, well, I mean, maybe it is for some people. I never experienced some like cosmic explosion that, you know, that was being described. It was more like what I found, and I still use these techniques a lot because they help me to throttle and ride my arousal state, and also to like heighten the sensation. So yeah, when I'm having sex, I will at various points, you know, slow the woman down, take her by the hips, and then I'll start to do some of that breathing and some of that internal work. And the effect that it has on me is, yeah, it feels like I'm alive, tingly, alert, much more present, and can feel like the subtleties in my body. There's a relaxed arousal, like I'm really horny, but I'm also really relaxed. So that's been the way that I've personally experienced that. And so I found that to be, and I think the biggest takeaway I have from it is that when I do that, I don't need to come, and I still feel satisfied, right? Mm. So it's not like I come every third or fourth girl or something, right? Because at my age, if I came with every girl, by the end of the week, I'd be ruined. So I need to preserve my energy. And I do that with, you know, girl one or two. I'll draw the energy up, let it filter down, usually towards the end of the session, and then I'll allow myself to cool, and then I feel, you know, really satisfied and still alert and alive and enlivened, as opposed to after an orgasm. Right. So yeah, that's been my kind of experience with that.
Well, I'm glad you confirmed that, because most of the guys who have told me, oh yeah, it's blah, 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 like, I was like, nah, I don't believe you. You know,
I think a lot of people say a lot of things that, yeah.
Yeah. What are your take on penis pills, Viagra, Cialis, medicating your way through some of these sexual dysfunctions?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm not going to say an absolute answer on this, but I think it's very dangerous to look to Viagra or any of those pills to save you the pain of dealing with something that's actually really important to deal with. Like, look, I mean, there's an old packet of Cialis in my drawer, and I use it like when I'm having a really big weekend or there's like two or more girls, then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna really need to like bring my A game here. So like, I think as an occasional enhancement, if you can be disciplined about it, fine, whatever. You know, you go into an orgy that weekend, whatever. You know, right. Okay, just. That's, I mean, they work.
Molly, right? And you might need some other stuff to counteract.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, you know, in those such situations, sure. But the problem comes with, and I've had friends and clients who I've talked to this about this, where they're like, well, you know, usually when I'm with a girl the first time, I struggle to get it up. So I started taking the blue pill to just get me through that one. Right. And it worked. Right. So cool. He has a good sexual experience. He gets hard. And then, he's going to have to do that always now, because the next time it happens, well, I better not risk it. And now I've anchored in my mind that my success is relying on that pill.
Right.
And so therefore, you know, you can pretty easily create pathways where you can't do anything without it. And of course, if you're doing those things regularly, well, you build up a tolerance, and eventually, you know, they won't work, or you're going to need to take more and more of them. And that's not good for your health. So yeah, that's the way I would view it. It's like, cool. Like, look, if you're on a date with the hottest, you know, you've got a date coming up with the hottest woman you've ever been with, and you desperately do not want to fuck it up. Okay, bite a quarter off an hour before, and then deal with it if she doesn't come home with you, and deal with the 48-hour erection. but yeah, I would say just guys to be careful, because look, it's easy to get addicted to any type of drug. Most people don't start taking any type of drug thinking they're going to get addicted to it. They take it for, you know, its purpose, and it works, and then they take more, and then it doesn't work anymore, and you take more. Like, you can see where it goes. So yeah, I'm not an absolutist on that, but I, you know, there actually, I mean, and the other thing is, be very skeptical of anything that says that it's a natural enhancement, like any of those things you get at the corner store bodega, or any of those Asian sex pills, because I remember we found one that was called Super Hard Power.
I remember that one.
And it was, and it was all natural. And on the back of it, it had a list of all sorts of natural herbs. And you know, so a bunch of us took it, and it fucking worked. And it was like, whoa, I've got boners for days. And then eventually I did a bit of a deep dive and just like, I should really check what's in this shit. And, you know, did some research and found that it's actually a company in whatever China that puts in a bunch of herbs and then puts in no name Viagra. And it's just basically Viagra.
I was wondering why that shit works so well, because you brought some of the Maldives and tried it, and I was like, this is
right. Yes. So yeah, sorry, that was just all shitty cheap Chinese Viagra, basically.
That's so funny. Yeah. I think that's spot on, because yeah, it's like, I find if you catch yourself thinking you need it, it becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy of you can't perform without it, and that's kind of when you're hooked. If someone's listening and they are feeling like they're hooked, is there any way to, like, you know, get off it, or any tips for that?
Yeah, like with any drug, you need to, if you're dependent on it, then I would be minimizing the dosage as opposed to going cold turkey on it. Cutting down the dosage.
Leveling down a bit.
Yeah, but then I'd say there's also going to need to be some kind of reacclimatizing period. Like, it's the same with guys who have extreme porn addictions, that it can take some months actually to kind of rewire the sexual pathways in your mind and in your body. I mean, look, there's much better ways. Well, let's say there's natural and much better ways to work on performance problems. And, you know, I teach that in my online course and in the live course. When it comes to learning to get over the physical anxiety of it, because for the most part, the reason why guys don't get it up, it's not a medical issue usually. It's simply fight or flight reflex activated, right? It's just simply that you feel nervous because this is a hot girl and you don't want to mess it up. And so your body goes into that fight or flight reaction, and when your body's in fight or flight, it takes blood away from unimportant areas and puts it in your extremities, so you're ready to punch or run.
Right.
So it doesn't need a dick at that moment. And I remember, like, back when I had problems, you know, my early days with this, I remember that feeling of like being in that state, losing my erection, and it was like I didn't have a dick. It was so numb. Like I couldn't even feel it. Mm-hmm. It was such a weird sensation. And it was simply because of that. So the way that I personally, because I had this issue for my first bunch of partners, the way that I started to initially solve it was actually just to talk to the girl about it. So I said, one day I said these words. I said, hey, listen, sometimes when I'm with a new partner, it doesn't work immediately. I think it's just because I get nervous. So let's just cuddle and make out for a while. Take the pressure off. Mm-hmm. Right. And that, like that sentence or variations upon that changed my life because, you know, I'm probably everyone's had this, or, you know, can relate to this of like the girl kind of kissing down your chest, going lower to give you a blowjob, and you're like, hurry up, we've got 5 more seconds before I lose this erection. And then by the time she gets down there, it's floppy. And then she's trying to, you know, suck your floppy dick and you're trying to pretend like everything's okay. And then she looks up at you and if she's Australian, she says, is everything all right? anything wrong? Those are my experiences. So, you know, that's humiliating for both of you. Creates a complex, makes it a, now it's a, now you have a problem, right? There's this thing that happens to you and I can't talk about it and I don't know how to deal with it and I'm just going to end up in this really awkward scenario. So, you know, to solve that kind of just out of frustration, I was just like, I'm just going to tell her what's going on. It's genius. And so by just saying, you know, when I'm with a new partner, so then she's not worried thinking, oh, it's about me. I'm ugly. I'm fat. He doesn't like me. Or it's about you. You're gay. There's something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Instead, it becomes not anyone's fault. It's just like, and there's a reason for it. It's just like, I'm with someone new. And sometimes I would add the compliment. I would say, look, sometimes I don't get up immediately and you're so hot that you're making me a little bit nervous. So let's do something else to take the pressure off. And then I would lead her into doing something else. Right. So then she feels hot and sexy and oh, okay, that makes sense. And then she usually wants to help you. And just on that, that it is important that you then do something else. Cause if I just said that, oh, sometimes I'm, you know, it doesn't work. I think it's just cause I'm nervous and then I stop and I don't create a solution. Now it's her problem. Right. But in this situation, I bring it up. Here's the issue or, you know, here's what's happened. And then I create the solution, which is do something that's physical and intimate, but doesn't require penetrative sex. So have a cuddle and make out and touch your body. Give her a massage naked together. Have a bath. You know, lie naked together and watch something on your laptop and just kind of, you know, idly touch your breasts. Right. So there's things where you're in physical contact. It's sensual. It's, you know, playful or it's sexy or whatever it is. It can be different tones, but it doesn't require you to get hard. That's what I found started to solve the problem for me because I was like, okay, now there's no expectation. Now I'm feeling more relaxed, you know, and I'm touching this beautiful woman. Oh, suddenly I'm hard again. Okay, let's try again.
Yeah, and that's so refreshing, I think, for women to hear too, because a lot of the time the opposite is happening where they're just like trying to get it in as fast as possible, pushing,
yep.
You know, the thirsty sort of dude where you're just like admittedly like, eh. Did you ever see that Jim Jeffries stand up where he talks about the difference between sluts and studs?
Yes.
And
yes,
he talks about how like, you know, hey, if you know, the female orgasm, it's like, you know, if I don't make you come, it's not my fault. Your cunt's broken. I've made other girls come before. I often have my clients just watch that just because the mindset where he's coming from, which is just like no pressure. You know, this isn't supposed to be this like, you know, this thing to obsess over too much where I feel like a lot of guys, you know, make that happen. I feel like that just kind of nails that thing, but it reminded me, your statement reminded me a little bit about that. Just being honest about what's going on and allowing that to create that communication, like you mentioned.
Because you know, otherwise it's, you know, it's a very lonely, weird experience to, you know, not get it up and be able to perform, and both of you are in your own weird worlds, like feeling bad about this situation. And that's where you're more likely to get a nasty, like the girl might feel like her pride's hurt or something, and so then she might lash out and go, something wrong with you or whatever. Like, I found that, you know, every time I did that, pretty much I can't remember any bad reactions, but it was just like immediately it relaxed everything and the girl was like, oh, okay, cool. What can I do to help? Like, you know, she gets it now and she wants you to feel good. She wants you to feel relaxed and you know, she wants a hard dick and she wants to have sex with you, but letting her know you're not a robot, you know, you're not a machine. And probably a lot of women think that, you know, men just get hard instantly or as soon as there's boobs in the room, because that's the cliche, which, you know, it's true sometimes. But that it's, you know, letting her know that, okay, I'm not a robot. This can be nervous and nerve-wracking for a man, but it can be solved. And that was the most important tool that I found to get over that issue. So you think about, like, compare that to taking the blue pill. Okay, so you might have taken the Viagra and then you didn't have to deal with that awkward situation. But dealing with that awkward situation, that's a man lesson, right? Right. That's a growing up lesson. That's something that reveals a lot of maturity and actually confidence, like real confidence. The confidence of ignorance, you know, the confidence of I don't know what I'm doing, the confidence of I need some help, and I'm directing that to a conclusion or a solution, right? Like, those are the kind of things that, you know, add to your personal development and growth as a man, as opposed to trying taking a shortcut to hide from the pain.
Right. Yeah. Super. You know, it's like you said, it's a moment of growth instead of reverting to, you know, some other thing. Another question for you. What about a guy who's been in a relationship for a long time, maybe monogamous, maybe not, but just a recurring partner for a long time? Any advice? I know you've had a lot of awesome recurring relationships over a long period of time that I've known you, same women in your life for a long time, come and go, of course. Any advice on, like, keeping things fresh or alive in the bedroom, like avoiding kind of falling into those just, you know, patterns?
Routine sex. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what I would say is, it kind of, to some extent, that depends on, like, how much damage you guys have done or how boring it's gotten, right? Like, it's kind of the same thing of, like, you know, when a guy comes to us and says, hey, look, I want to hire you, and I want you to help me pick up this girl that I've known for 2 years.
Right.
and I'm like, save your money, buddy.
Right.
you know, because it's like, if she was going to be attracted to you, it was going to be 2 years ago. You know, it's kind of too late for that. I can teach you how to meet other women, but I can't teach you how to pick up that one girl.
Right.
So, look, you know, sometimes in relationships, things have kind of reached a sexual dead end, or there's resentment, or, you know, there's things that maybe cannot be solved or would require therapy, let's say, you know, might require, you know, more intervention. But, okay, so look, this is it's natural that over time the Coolidge effect is real, and, you know, people get used to each other. There's a number of things. I would say variety is probably variety and mystery, I would say, would be the two things, because maybe one of the mistakes that people make in relationships is getting too familiar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like taking dumps in front of each other and, you know, cutting your toenails in front of each other, the stuff that Australian couples just, that's how you know it's your fucking girl, you know, she fucking wipes your ass for you. And that's one thing I always noticed about Ukrainians is, like, I don't think Ukrainian girls don't fart. They don't shit.
Great.
I've never seen any evidence of it. Mm-hmm. Never any evidence of it. You know, like, it's definitely a thing in the East where, like, when they present to their man, I mean, often they're very done up, but, you know, like they wear nice panties around the house when they're walking around.
Yeah, Ukraine, you know, really has the personal hygiene thing. They do it right over there. Like, I started shaving my armpits when I moved to
Kiev. Yeah, right.
And they hold that in very high regard, which is great. I think other cultures should too.
Yeah. So it's like, and look, you know, when kids get involved and whatever else, you know, it's this is not always realistic, and you know, life gets in the way, and you can't always be a sexy plaything. But having enough mystery of each other that you still keep the attraction, like spending time apart with other friends, you know, not just only doing routine things together, which, again, I know it can be hard when you're living together and, you know, got normal lives or whatever, but having actual date nights, having nights off, maybe not always checking in with each other 8 times a day, but, like, these kinds of things which can reignite a bit of polarity. That's good. When it comes to the bedroom itself, Well, yes, it's definitely looking. I would be looking at, okay, what is your routine? Because you absolutely have one, right? And you could, you know, most people get into a very specific or one or two routine kind of sequence. And so I'd be looking at that and going, okay, well, if I always go down on her first because I read that book that said you should or whatever, then switch it up. You know, bend her over the table, rip her panties down and fuck her immediately, right? If that's something that you wouldn't usually do. I mean, look, there's so many things that we can throw into the mix to spice things up and bring toys and fantasies and role plays and stuff, which is definitely good. But it's going to come down to the variety of sensations and, let's say, surprises that you can give to the girl. And that doesn't necessarily mean learning hundreds and hundreds of techniques, although that wouldn't be bad. I think it's more to do with, like, I don't want her to think every time I know what's going to come next. Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like I want to have all sorts of Lego blocks that I can turn into different shapes and reverse them. You know, like simple stuff like having sex in different locations, not always doing it in the bedroom. Like sitting down with your woman and also discussing this, like, is good to do, like, to sit down and not to phrase it in terms of there's a problem, but to phrase it in terms of I'd really like us to take our sexual relationship to a new level, and I'd really like to explore some new things with you, and I don't feel like I know everything about your fantasies or what it is that you like or have wanted to do, and I want to open that up now and ask you about that. All right, so, and some girls will be like, finally, cool, here's all this stuff I wanted to try, and others may be nervous about it. And if, I mean, I do this with, you know, new partners as well, I'll have this kind of discussion, and, you know, I say the things you wanted to try or fantasies, and then they're like, well, I'm not sure, and they kind of have something, but they're not, they feel nervous to say it. Then I might give her options. Right, I say, okay, well, have you ever fantasized about, you know, being in a really aggressive situation? And her eyes light up, and then I follow that breadcrumb and I say, okay, well, would it turn you on if I was a stranger, for example? And then she's like, yes, that sounds good. And I'm like, oh, actually, no, it'd be better if you were my boss or something. Okay, cool. We can start adjusting, figure out what her fantasy role play might be, for example. And I'll put those things to her as well. One thing I've always wanted to try with you. Yeah, something that I really have been imagining doing with you, or when I saw you in that dress the other day, when I saw you like practicing yoga the other day, I just wanted to come up behind you and rip the yoga pants apart and fuck you right there. And she says, and she gives some kind of cool reaction. And I said, cool. Tomorrow, wear the yoga pants that you don't mind getting ripped, like that kind of thing.
I'm not the guy so, that related.
Yeah. So yeah, look. It's going to come down to that, yes, you do need to put effort into it, especially in a long-term relationship. Like you'll usually get – if you guys are hot for each other in the early days, then you're just going to be riding off the kind of that honeymoon attraction to each other. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, of course, that's going to change over time. So it takes research, actually giving a shit, opening good lines of communication, creating variety. Those are some good parts.
Yeah, no, that was
places
great.
To start.
Super applicable, dude. This has been awesome. So if guys,
yeah, we've been ranting for ages.
Yeah, no, I feel like we just keep going. But
yeah,
if anything else that you feel like is super important, you want to leave the guys with, and then
I think we gave them a good download. Yeah,
yeah, I think so too. So you've got the sex class, you've got the master class coming out. How would you recommend guys get involved if they want to learn more? You know, what are their options?
Right. Well, on the sexual side of things, so right now I've just launched my online sexuality training course called the Master Lover Method. And so this is, I've taken the live version, which I've been running for the last 5 years, and now put it into a home study format. So the course is 5 weeks long. It's 50 plus hours of totally unreleased content. And I brought in 5 very sexy, very open-minded ladies to assist me in this product. So I have filmed in explicit granular detail everything. And I mean everything. So, yes, like, it, you know, from all sorts of fingering techniques, squirting, anal sex, spanking, choking, role play, tantra, dominance, fantasies, communication, consent, negotiation, like, I have packed my 25 years of sex nerdery into this course, and I'm very, very proud of it. So I'm very excited that it's finally out. So if you would want to join that, then the enrollments are open from now until the 12th of March coming up. So short amount of time to jump on the course, because it's a video course, but it's also a live mentorship course. So I run webinars with me and with my sex mentors, right? So tantric teachers and the gentleman that I mentioned before, Sir Dominic, as well as sexual psychologists that I know. So my sexual mentors, or people I've learned a lot from, I'm bringing in to assist in the course as well. Plus, you know, huge number of bonuses. It's really a massive action-packed course. So if you want to find out more about it, Robbie, I believe you will be putting a link in the description. What do you guys call it on this platform?
Show notes, description. You'll see it down there.
Show notes. Yeah. Right, cool. So yes, you can click that, and there's a, you know, go to the info page, and it gives you full information on the course. And be a pleasure to have you on board. Other than that, I run live seduction workshops and the much more expensive live version of the sex course. So if anyone wants to find out about what it is that I do, you can just go to thenaturallifestyles.com or check out The Natural Lifestyles YouTube. We put out two videos or more a week, so we're pretty prolific there. So yeah, and then if you happen to be wandering around the countryside of Portugal, you might bump into me there as well.
I miss those skits you were doing. You were putting those out on Instagram. That was like, do you remember what I'm talking about? You were like playing this character. I'm trying to picture it, but I think it was during COVID. You were playing like the farmer.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, whenever it feels like business might kind of collapse because of some global catastrophe, then I just switch into putting out comedy videos, because that's what I enjoy doing. No, right now business is all right. So I'm back to the practical stuff.
No, your Instagram's great. I think you should. You don't post there as often as I feel like you should.
Nah, I gave up. One day I just went, I don't want to do this anymore. And I haven't regretted that decision. So yeah.
Well, you guys have to go to YouTube.
I feel like I might be done.
Yeah.
So yeah. Come and see me on YouTube, join the course, and or come and do a live course. Be awesome.
Right. Dude, it's been amazing. This has been one of the, I think, most action and actionable advice and you know, value-driven podcast I've done in a while. So thanks so much for coming
on.
Well,
it's a pleasure. And I always try to give something practical, because I really, you know, I want to help dudes. I've been in this industry for 15 years or more, and I've seen the real profound change that can come about when guys get permission to become their actual masculine selves, and they get the tools, and it spreads beautiful, good things to both men and women, and probably to future generations. So yeah, more than happy to help.
Yeah, 100%. All right, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, Robbie. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah. Thanks, James.
All right. Peace.